when you open the door to heirloom seeds, you find out, you're like, holy moly, I had no idea that all of these different variations and species existed.
Welcome to the Off-Grid Outpost podcast, where we discuss the journey to real liberty through self-sufficiency, counter-economics, non-aggression, and the agora.
The Outpost represents the border between societal norm and the pioneer spirit. Every episode contains practical, philosophical, and technical information you can use to gain the freedom you deserve. Hey everyone, it's Regina with the Off-Grid Outpost podcast. And today we are talking about the monopoly on seeds. I'm here with Cyrus.
Good morning.
And yeah, seeds. Okay. We don't think about them too much, I don't think.
Most people don't.
But they are the foundation to our food supply. So it's a really hot topic. It's politically charged. There's lots of controversy, yet we don't really hear much about it because there's lots and lots of money and power involved.
And I think also that people have gotten, I mean, too many people don't even pay attention to where the food comes from anymore, so it's just not on their mind.
Yeah, I think we've kind of been trained that we just go into the supermarket, there's beautiful foods at our fingertips, we can pretty much have everything that we want, and everything's packaged perfectly, you pluck it off a shelf, take it to the checkout stand, and you're done.
Right. Doesn't matter where it came from.
Yeah, no matter where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
One interesting thing I noticed is the vast difference between a homegrown produce and a grocery store produce.
Oh, yeah.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
They have perfected this produce thing down to a science. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, I don't even like tomatoes on my burgers unless the tomato came from a garden, like, I guess they all come from a garden at some point, but I mean, like a store-bought tomato, I don't even put them on my burgers.
Yeah, I don't even know if it's a garden anymore, honestly. It's more so to get that perfect tomato that we see in the grocery stores consistently. I mean, that requires like some sort of indoor operation with artificial light, probably hydroponic system, probably vertical gardening. I'd say it's definitely gotten away from what you would traditionally think is a garden.
Yeah. The garden, like when I grow tomatoes in my garden, they are flawed. You know, they're not that
heavily.
They're not that perfectly little round red tomato that's that you see at the grocery store. Sometimes you get weird shapes and little blemishes but
oh yeah.
They taste better.
They taste way better. That's for sure. And they're way healthier for you.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just no freaking way once after we put this garden in this year and I saw our produce that come out of it and the produce that comes out of the grocery store. There is no freaking way those plants are grown in the dirt outside.
Yeah.
No way. That they're like almost like they're almost lab grown produces.
Yeah.
Is what I think it is.
I'm sure it's, you know, big operations. I don't know how they do it, but there is definitely a difference between what you buy in the store and what you grow at home in look and taste. There's just a difference.
In look and taste, yeah, definitely. Well, when I drive around, like, fields, I don't see tomato fields and squash fields and, you know, even lettuce and things like that. You don't see that. The fields, you see corn, bean, wheat. What else do you see? Corns, beans, wheat, soybean. I know there's a lot of soybean out there.
Yeah, a lot of soy. Peanut.
Peanuts, yeah. Yeah. Sunflowers. You'll see sunflowers, especially up north in North Dakota.
Mm.
And so you don't see, like, your vegetables growing in farm fields. That's because they're all grown in almost lab-like conditions to achieve perfection. And they know exactly, like, how many nutrients to feed this plant. And it's probably growing in some sort of, like, perlite, non-soil mixture, you know, to contain the growth of bacteria. So it's like this very sterile environment.
Yeah.
Just kind of interesting thought. But yeah, our seeds are in danger, really. It seems like everything's in freaking danger right now.
Right.
So seeds are just another thing.
Yeah. You know, I find it interesting that I read one time, and I'm not going to get the numbers right because this was a long time ago when I read this, but we've already lost like some huge percentage of the variety, you know, like the things that people grew in their backyards 100 years ago, like we don't even have a lot of those species of plant anymore.
I want to say it's 75%. I read that statistic too somewhere. It's a very like large number.
Mm-hmm.
Well over 50%. I really want to recall that it's 75%.
Yeah.
So what's happening is basically we have a dangerous corporate control of our seed supply and agribusiness, and they decide what seeds are going to be grown now. You know, the diversity is being taken out and replaced with what's going to grow the fastest, the biggest, the easiest, the return on investment.
What'll store longest and ship better and stack nicer.
What packages well, what sits on the shelf well. Yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. So we're having this funneling of our food diversity that favors corporate gains as opposed to personal human gains.
Mm-hmm.
It's the dehumanization of food. It's very dangerous.
One of the important things about diversity is that all these different types of vegetables, they all have different types of nutrients and different levels of the same nutrients. And so it's best for the human body to get a large variety. And we don't get that anymore, or we don't get it like we used to get it anyway.
Well, I mean, you look at how many varieties of tomato there is in a grocery store. I would recall maybe 3 to 4. I would say there's like the slicer, you know, the tomatoes, the slicing tomato.
Yeah.
The Roma tomato. I love Roma tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And like a cherry tomato.
Right. Yeah, that's pretty much all there is.
Mm-hmm.
And even just within those, there's several different varieties of cherry tomato, but you only get one when you go to the store. That's why I like buying heirloom seeds because, man, you can find some really delicious stuff, you know?
Oh, yeah. When you open the door to heirloom seeds, you find out, you're like, holy moly, I had no idea that all of these different variations and species existed. I mean, there's probably 50 varieties of tomatoes.
Oh, yeah, at least. We grew some of these cherry tomatoes this year that were, I mean, I picked them out just because they were pretty, but they have these green striations in them, like little tiger stripes.
Yeah.
And they're just beautiful and they're delicious. And, but I mean, that's off topic, but yeah, heirloom seeds is where to go.
Oh, yeah. The depth of flavor in heirloom is, it's almost vintage.
Right.
Because it is vintage.
Yeah.
You can, like, when you have a vintage wine, you can taste that depth of flavor as opposed to like a newer mass produced wine.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with heirloom.
Right.
You are missing out if you don't even have, like, if you don't plant one, at least one heirloom tomato plant in your life, you're missing out. Because you do. You get a vintage depth of flavor that's unbeatable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's absolutely no doubt about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I just quickly want to put out there that I am selling heirloom open pollinated seeds. I have an Etsy store, Maximum Off Grid. You could just type that in. And I have 46 varieties of heirloom seeds that I package and ship. And it's all very, you know, small operation, good business practice backed seed production and distribution. So if you're looking to get into heirloom seeds and you want to get away from GMO, you want to get away from hybrid, you want to actually be able to seed save, visit my shop. I have really good prices.
What I was going to bring up is that when you go to the store, like to buy heirloom seeds, first, if you can find them in whatever store you're in, you can't always find them. But, you know, they can be $4 or $5 a pack for heirloom seeds. And you're selling it like half that.
Yep. I try to stay around $2.50 a seed pack. And I try and sell a reasonable amount of seed. So, you know, you don't need like 2,000 lettuce seeds. I mean, albeit they're small, you know. But it's like, why do you want to pay the extra money for a bunch of seeds? So I actually try and offer the correct proportion of seed per package. And then I package it in like a wax-lined glass, almost like a paper bag, not a plastic.
Mm-hmm.
So this little seeds don't stick because little seeds stick to plastic bags. So I've like really thought it through. And then I also put it in a like airproof heat or a seal-proof barrier bag for storage, like depending on the size of seeds you get, how many seeds you get. So it's just a well-thought-out product because I really just realized, I'm like, you know what? This seed thing is very real, and I want to have seeds for me. Mm-hmm. And I want to be able to help others get into seeds and seed saving and food growing. So
right. Yeah. And it's up to us to save those vintage varieties. You know, because yeah. The people who grow the world's food supply are certainly not interested in saving those seeds.
Well, I think they're anti-heirloom seed because they can't patent them and make tons of money on them. So mm-hmm. we need to practice seed sovereignty now so our future generations have seeds and food in the future before agribusiness and these massive corporations take all of our food power away from us, which they are doing. At an astounding rate.
Probably intentionally, too.
Very intentionally. Well, that's what I want to bring up. There is a program with these giant corporations that are going into small third world countries, like, you know, Africa, for example. They are paying the farmer to switch over to their seed. So this farmer has his heirloom seeds from generations from prior farmers. Mm-hmm. He struggles, but he does all right. Well, a big company like Monsanto approaches this small farmer and says, hey, I'm going to give you $20,000 for you to switch over to our Roundup line of seeds. It's a great thing because you use the Roundup chemical on it and the seed is resilient to this herbicide. So you'll have way less problems with weeds and insects mm-hmm. if you switch over, and we're going to pay you. The desperate, poor third world country farmer says yes. Now he is beholden to Monsanto. He has lost all of his rights to his seeds. He cannot afford to switch back to his heirloom, older generation seeds. And now he's having problems with productivity because the reality is that even though he may have gotten less from his heirloom variety, it was more resilient. So now he's having problems even keeping his Monsanto GMO seeds alive.
Isn't there also a problem with cross-contamination and the genetic markers? I don't know. I might be talking out of turn.
Are you talking legally or biologically?
Well, both, but legally, like, I've heard stories about Monsanto seeds cross-pollinating other farmers' fields. And then Monsanto comes in and tests that farmer's field. It's got some kind of genetic marker that they've patented. And now Monsanto sues that farmer because they're claiming patent infringement. But he didn't do anything but plant his own seed, and their seed cross-pollinated with it because it was in a, you know, quarter mile radius and the wind blew the pollen across a field or something.
Yep.
I'm not sure I'm speaking correctly about all that. It just seems like I've heard something about that.
There's been some controversy. It's kind of hard to find this information. And I've heard of these lawsuits happening. I read an article that said that these lawsuits are a myth. I read another article that said that Monsanto has won $23 million in damages because of this. And I think it's more so farmers reseeding their fields instead of purchasing Monsanto seeds. So it's a little unclear.
Yeah.
But what is clear is that Monsanto holds farmers hostage, and they have to basically sign a contract pledging that they will not save Monsanto seeds, that they must purchase fresh seeds every year from Monsanto.
That's ridiculous.
Yes. Farmers are not allowed to seed save Monsanto's GMO seeds. So they are beholden to Monsanto. And then you're like, well, why can't they just opt out? Well, they can opt out. But when you have four giant companies controlling the global 60% of the global seed supply, mm-hmm. you might not be able to get that all the corn seed that you need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And part of our new almost industrial food production has gotten away from the 100-year-old traditional farmer who he grew crops and he saved his own seeds from those crops and replanted them next year. Like, now the farmer, I mean, does he even have time to worry about his own seeds and try and produce, you know, 5,000 more seeds for next year? Does he have the time to do that anymore? because things get so specialized in this industrial type food production.
Yeah, this industrial food production model is literally like killing us in the long term, mm-hmm. which is kind of interesting for so many reasons. I mean, there's like so many ways. So basically, there used to be the Big Six that controlled the majority of the seeds, which is Monsanto, DuPont, Syngenta, Dow, Bayer, and BASF. These Big Six in 2016, these Big Six turned into the Big Four, which is now Bayer and Corteva, a Dow-DuPont merger, and Kim China. So now these four firms, they control more than 60% of global seeds.
Mm.
Over half. And they are encroaching and will keep pushing that as far as they can go. They will do 100% if they could.
Well, sure. That's the goal. Make as much money as you can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then these small business plant breeders are being edged out of agribusiness by huge corporate giants. So these small farmers, you know, they're just getting wiped out. They almost have to comply. They almost have to.
Yeah, just another reason to support your local farmer, your local farmer's market, you know.
Have to support these people.
Yeah, buy your heirloom seeds from individuals. Buy your, you know, starter plants from individuals or local nurseries. That's why it's important to support those people.
We need to move local, like, in every facet of our lives, and I think we're definitely seeing this. Like, we all know, like, the centralized banking system is massively manipulated and is eventually going to collapse.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the same thing is happening with our food supplies. We have a centralized food system that will basically collapse because that's just the way these structures are built.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there has to be decentralization, just like with cryptocurrency, you know.
Right.
Like, as we discussed in a prior episode, cryptocurrency is decentralized, which makes it resilient to takeover and manipulation and collapse. Well, we need to do that with our food. We need to decentralize our seeds. Seed sovereignty.
Yeah, that's the key word, sovereignty, you know.
Mm-hmm. It's huge. It's super important.
I mean, we save seeds from year to year, and it's really not that hard. You know, but we're not trying to feed 200,000 people with a huge field of one crop either. We're just growing food for us, and we usually have enough to share with neighbors. And when you do it on a small scale, a small local sovereign scale like that, it's not that hard. It doesn't take that much time. We spent a couple hours yesterday, and, you know, we canned a bunch of bread and butter pickles from the garden. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah, that sovereignty comes from, you know, it's your choice. You got to own the seed.
Well, and heirloom seeds cannot be patented, so they're sovereign. You know, heirloom seeds will always be sovereign. They're non-patentable because they're not modified. So once you genetically modify a seed is where the patents come into play.
So is there a difference? I don't really know about genetically modified stuff in that sense, but like, let's take a generational family who has developed a certain variety of tomato or blackberry or whatever it is over decades. They've selected out mm-hmm. particular plants to grow the next year and have developed a variety. What is the difference between that and genetically altered?
So what you described is an heirloom seed. So something that takes a long time to develop, it naturally occurs. So you're favoring traits of a plant that you enjoy, and you save the seeds and you save the seeds, and over generations that seed becomes very stable and very resilient.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to have some variety, you know. One fruit might taste a little sweeter than the other, might have a little bit of a different color. Variation's important. But in general, you're going to get the same result from the father or from the mother seed, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's an heirloom seed.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go into an open pollinated seed. So all heirloom seeds are open pollinated. Open pollinated seeds are not all heirloom. And basically, an open pollinated seed is the beginnings of an heirloom seed.
Okay.
It's a new form of the seed that can be saved from the parent, and you're going to get the same results from the child plant. But it's just newer. It hasn't been developed for, you know, a century yet.
Okay.
Maybe it has 5 years, 10 years.
Okay.
So then we get into hybrid seed. So a hybrid seed is a crossbreed of two plants to get the desired result. So let's say you really enjoy the sweetness of a cherry tomato, but you really enjoy the plumpness of a delicious tomato. That's a large, you know, cutter tomato. So you breed the two, you end up with a smaller tomato that's sweeter.
Right.
It's not as small as a cherry. It's not, it has more sweetness in the delicious. So you get the two traits that you want. But now if you plant that next generation seed, it will be unstable. Or it may not even germinate. So then what I would do is if I wanted to create an open pollinated seed from that hybrid, I would just have to start selecting which seeds germinate, try and get the best results from that plant, take those seeds, do it another generation, 5, 10 years, I may have this really nice open pollinated plant. And then 20, 30, 50 years, I now have an heirloom seed. So you can create it, which is really, really freaking cool, I think.
Sure. Yeah. And it just becomes more and more stable over time.
Yes.
And I would imagine it, over time, it becomes acclimated to your region of the world. So it becomes acclimated to your weather conditions, your soil conditions, your, you know, everything.
Yep. It's super exciting, actually. Yeah. It's very fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a hybrid can happen naturally. Like in our garden this year, we had a cucumber plant next to a yellow crookneck squash. Well, a little busy bee decided to get some pollen for my crookneck squash and went over to my cucumber plant and took a little pollen there. And before I knew it, I had this yellow, weird shaped cucumber. And I'm like, what's this? And I picked it and it was actually really good.
Yeah, we get those too.
Yeah.
It's really easy.
So, you know, hybrid happens.
Squash and cucumbers cross-pollinate really easily.
Oh, yeah. The only way to really prevent that is to be super diligent, and when that flower opens, immediately pollinate it with its own, you know, species.
Mm-hmm.
Or you just add, like, a netting around it so the little bugs can't really get in and pollinate it. And then you're like, well, then how does it get pollinated? Well, you either have to hand-pollinate or you net it. You net one species one day, you take the net off, and you net another species the next day. So
right.
That's a whole, like, heirloom seed process. If you're into seed saving, it's really important. And that definitely requires more talking about. But I've actually been really planning on writing a huge article on how to create heirloom seeds and seed save. I just haven't gotten around to it yet.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
That'd make a really good book.
Mm-hmm.
A little mini ebook or PDF.
Mm-hmm.
So moving along in our list here, so we covered heirloom, we covered open pollinated, we covered hybrid, and then we get to GMO. What is a GMO seed exactly, a genetically engineered seed? So a genetically engineered seed is when a scientist takes a seed in a lab, they alter the DNA trait with a typically a non-plant trait. So they alter the DNA. It could be from a little bit of fish DNA. It could be a little bit of frog DNA. It could be a little bit of bacteria DNA. And they infuse it into the DNA of this plant, right?
Mm-hmm.
So right there, it's Frankenstein. Like, we should already be questioning, this isn't right.
Yeah, and they don't tell you what it is they're doing.
No, we don't know.
And I guess
it's all proprietary. It's all patented.
I guess the purpose of that is to make these monocrop systems more, I don't know, efficient in some way.
What it does, the purpose is, let's take Monsanto for an example. Monsanto creates Roundup. Roundup is gnarly, nasty stuff that kills everything it touches.
Yeah.
Except for its genetically modified seed is resilient to dying from Roundup. So you could basically nuke your cornfield and nuke everything out of existence except your genetically modified corn crop. That is exactly what GMOs are built for.
Yeah, that seems creepy.
I think it's very radical.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also used for, you know, Roundup is specifically more so herbicide. It's also used for pesticide. It's also used for certain fertilizers. So you basically have a Frankenstein plant that is resilient to something it should actually basically be nuked from.
Yeah, and we have no idea what effects that may have on our health at some point, too.
Yeah, the effect. So there's this argument that GMOs in itself are not harmful. Like eating the DNA of a GMO plant is not harmful. We can't trace any. But what we can say is that Roundup is very harmful. Okay, Roundup is made of glyphosate. That's the main ingredient in Roundup. It is a main ingredient in Agent Orange as well, which is no good.
Mm-hmm.
The WHO has come out and has labeled glyphosate a probable carcinogen.
Mm.
So Monsanto owns 34% of the seed market, which now that has changed because Monsanto turned into, what do we say, Bayer. So who knows how much bigger it's gotten. But as of, I think, 2016, they own 35% of the seed market. So we can say 35% of our seeds have been nuked with glyphosate, which is a probable carcinogen, which is causing cancer. And we're wondering why one in every 2 to 3 Americans is getting cancer.
Right.
That's where GMOs are dangerous, let alone whatever Frankenstein DNA effect it has on us from the altering of the DNA. Isn't it crazy?
It's just really crazy.
You say it out loud and you're like, mind blown, sir.
Yeah, it's like dystopian sci-fi.
Yeah, the transhumanist evolution of our food. It's more of a devolution, de-evolution, I think.
But mm-hmm.
Feeding the masses, I think we can feed the masses without all this BS.
Well, yeah, for sure. I mean, because
yeah,
people should just grow food. I mean.
Really? Yeah, like they did in the, 30s, yeah. 40s.
I mean, I understand that there are parts of the world that it's hard to grow food, but the answer isn't making the rest of our food supply carcinogenic.
Yeah. Another carcinogen, a potential carcinogen, WHO won't come out and say it, is the use of 2,4-D, which is another massive pesticide. It has been... Something happened in a lawsuit or a regulation has been deregulated. So now we are expected to see a 300 to 700% growth of use in 2,4-D, which could, by the WHO, quote unquote, possibly be carcinogenic.
The problem is planting one entire field with a single crop. You end up with
monocrop system.
Yeah, you end up with all these problems in that system. That now you've got to use fertilizer and you've got to use pesticides and all these other things. But, I don't use any pesticides on my garden. I mean, I lose a few plants to some bugs, but I always just figure that's kind of like a cost of doing business. You're not going to have 100% production. You're going to lose some. And I just figure that's okay because I don't want to put all the chemicals on my plants. And
you don't want to eat that stuff.
Right. And I grow all my stuff is all just kind of mixed around together. And so.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You don't get one type of pest that just flourishes because its favorite food is all in one spot.
That's right. Yeah, I actually have a present for you.
Oh, yeah.
So, when I pack, the seeds, sometimes I'll, spill some. There's some spillage that occurs.
Right.
So I've been slowly collecting the spillage, and I have this little baggie that's literally probably 20 different seed varieties.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Just mishmashed together, and I want to who would section off just a part of their, property that they could just sprinkle these seeds and water them and just kind of see what happens. Oh, so
yeah,
I was like, you would probably be okay with that. I bet you'd be up for that experiment.
I'm down for sure.
Oh my goodness. I can't even tell you what's in there. There's definitely tomato. There's definitely melon. There's some corn. Cause also I've been collecting the broken seeds. I'm like, I bet this broken seed would grow, but I don't want to sell a broken seed to a customer. So right. I just throw it in the bag. So there's broken bean seeds and broken corn seeds. And so those are in there.
Yeah.
There's definitely radish. I had a huge radish spill a couple weeks ago. So there's a lot of radishes in there. There's definitely lettuce because I spilt legit spilt a whole tablespoon of lettuce seeds.
Oh my gosh, a tablespoon of lettuce, that's 1,000 plants.
Yeah, it is. There's a lot. I couldn't salvage all of it, but I figured I'm going to send that to you, like, come spring, and then you can just scatter it and see what happens. And then it's basically permaculture at that point.
Yeah, for sure.
Kind of haphazard, chaotic permaculture.
Yeah, that's an excellent idea.
Yeah, that's kind of fun. So I kind of want to go back to the topic of the patent on plants and why it's dangerous. The patent was developed to, like, protect, like, an entrepreneur, like, way back in the old days. So, like, of course, everything comes from a point of, like, good, you know, for the greater good. It'll actually help diversity and whatnot, you know. And back in, like, the 1930s was the first patent on a plant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was way less harmful back then before you can, like, do lab things. You know,
yeah.
Splicing our plants with frog DNA. That doesn't sit right with me.
And it just seems so counterintuitive to me. Just the idea of patenting a living thing just seems, I don't know, there's just something wrong with that. Maybe it's just my brain, but...
Well, let's dive into that, because we were kind of chatting about this, like, where could this patenting living things go? Like, how far do you think down the rabbit hole could it go?
Well, I mean, it eventually ends up to patenting animals and patenting human parts, or... Mm. I mean, where do you stop if once you start, you know? In our society at this time, we definitely stop. We definitely draw the line at patenting human DNA.
Wow.
But 100 years from now, maybe not.
Well, yeah, like, where does it go? Because 100 years ago is when they made the first patents on plants.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought it was harmless, and now we're seeing how extremely dangerous it is. So then what's the next step? Like, now we're making genetically modified cows to be resilient to some sort of disease.
Or Roundup.
You know, grow meat. Yeah, right?
Probably already happening in a lab somewhere.
I think there's so much happening in labs right now, it's insane. Alex Jones, like, he kind of nerded out on this, you know, lab thing. And I remember him saying that there was, like, leaked documents or leaked footage of labs with half man, half pigs, and really, like, disturbing, creepy stuff.
Like,
and it's like, who's to say that's not happening? I'm pretty sure it is.
What was that story? The island of Dr. Moreau or something like that?
Yeah. I never read that story, but I've heard of it.
I remember,
it's called a chimera. That's what it is. If you look it up, Alex Jones, chimera. And it gets really disturbing really fast. I don't really like to disturb myself to those levels, but essentially it's splicing humans with animals and coming out with these bizarre creatures, and they're alive on, like, life support and just very eerie stuff. But it's like, who's there to stop them, and where is it happening, and why wouldn't it happen? Because we definitely have the technology to do it.
Well, and there's a theory, too, that basically says if we think it up, it'll eventually happen.
Yeah. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So once it enters the human consciousness, it eventually develops into reality.
Right.
That's effing crazy. But it seems like, I mean, we see it happen all the time, like the 50s and 60s and space travel and all these modern things is happening now. You know?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's so many examples of science fiction becoming reality. You know, I remember Star Trek had flip phones, you know.
Yeah, right.
So there's all kinds of examples of things in sci-fi movies becoming real.
Yeah, I listened to a podcast. Man, I'm going to have to look it up. It was so freaking fascinating. This genetically modifying living organisms movement. And so there are scientists that are wanting to do the greater good. So they're trying to push genetic modification into, like, parasites. So, for example, they are trying to make mosquitoes sterile. So then they go to Africa and they talk to a community and they say, we can get rid of all your mosquitoes, which therefore gets rid of all your malaria. We have to genetically modify this mosquito to become sterile over, like, five generations. But they're leaving it up to the people for now? Is this something you want us to do? They're trying to find an area where the people, the community, will allow for them to test these genetic modifications in living creatures.
Hmm. Interesting.
And so far, like, the communities have said no, but at some point it's going to be a yes.
Yeah.
Because it's irreversible. And so they explain it to these people. It's like, we do this, it's irreversible, and we don't really know the damages of taking the mosquitoes out of your ecosystem.
Yeah, that was my thought. How do we know what impact that'll have on the ecosystem?
And then there was another. So they approached another people, New Zealand, where they have, like, a rat problem, and rats are not native there. So the rats are eating, like, all the flightless birds, you know, because the birds there, they didn't have to adapt to learn to fly because there was no cats, there was no rats, nothing like that. So these rodents are decimating these natural populations. And so they approached those people and wanted to genetically modify the rats out of existence. And those people also said no, but it was very heated. It was very, like, on the fence.
Yeah, it'll eventually happen.
So we're like, it's encroaching already. And the fact that they're asking permission, when is that going to turn into, well, we're going to do it anyways.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what the implications of it are going to be, but we're going to start taking control of the genetics. And then the program, I'm going to have to find the program so I can share it with you guys. Because it goes on to a doctor performing DNA genetic variations on embryos, so mothers can have babies with blue eyes and brown hair or blonde hair, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And he's operating somewhere in the world, I forget where, and he's doing it. Like, it's happening.
Yeah, I think that kind of stuff is probably inevitable for us.
Yeah.
Good or bad.
It's already happening. Oh, yeah. I mean, and there was a lot of, like, in this program, there was a lot of, like, really good things they were doing with it. Healing DNA diseases that were incurable, shoot, even 5 years ago.
Wow.
It was mind-blowing. Pretty mind-blowing.
I can only imagine the conspiracy rabbit hole that will create.
Yeah. I could dive deep and hard into that.
Mm-hmm.
So back to patents on plants and why it's dangerous. So basically, you know, the plant is patented if you change the DNA, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I plant a seed with a DNA alteration, I do not own that plant. Technically. So Monsanto could walk into my little household garden, test the seed of one of my plants and just rip it out of the ground. They own it.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So then, but then it goes further, okay? So then if I have that plant and then I seed save from it and then I plant 20 plants, the same thing can happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it gets even more dangerous. Now, if I understand the law correctly, and I believe I do, the DNA plant will naturally develop various genetic traits on its own.
Uh-huh.
So now the GMO plant is genetically evolving, because that's what plants do, but they still own the genetic variations of that plant, even if it's not related to the original DNA genetic variation.
As long as it has whatever marker is patented.
Mm-hmm. So then how far and deep does this patent and ownership go?
Yeah.
50 years from now, the plant has evolved to have all these genetic traits, but it's all owned under one patent. Very dangerous.
Yeah, I think we should just say there should be no patents on living things.
There should be no patents on living things, 100%. Granted, these patents were made before GMOs, but then in 1980, they passed the GMO patent, that you can patent GMO.
Mm-hmm.
So the law is not favoring natural, of course.
Right. Well, because law is written by corporations.
Yes, exactly. The people with the money write the laws, lobby the laws, buy the laws. The people buy, the corporations buy the laws.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes me want our viewers or our listeners to go back to our episode, Unmasking the State, so you can really start questioning where your laws come from. And why?
And even more importantly, why it's okay to choose not to comply when it goes against your own morals.
It's very important
mm-hmm.
to opt out, to not comply, to not feel bad for not paying taxes. There's a lot of reasons why. In that episode, we really, like, we go deep and hard into that, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's really another mind-blowing episode. That's what we do around here.
And just like all the other things that we talk about when it comes to self-sufficiency, sovereignty, self-ownership, all these problems are easily solved by your own initiative. You know what I mean? Like,
it's true.
Start growing food. Even if it's just a little bit of food, get some heirloom seeds, grow your own food, save the seeds, do it again next year. And it doesn't have to be a big deal. I mean, you know, my wife and I, we grow food and we don't grow a lot of food. And we probably spend, just maintaining the garden. It's like 30 minutes a day. Now, there's a lot of work that goes in on the front side. You got to build your beds or do whatever it is you're going to do and how you're going to grow your garden. There's a lot of front end work, you know, some preparation work. But once you establish it, it's simple. And then, you know, you don't have to go as far as canning the food and having it for winter like we do. You can just eat what you get right then and give away the rest. But that goes a long way to solving this problem of food monopolies by huge corporations.
Mm-hmm. It does. And one fruit from your plant or vegetable, I mean, it's going to make a lot of freaking seeds.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
One fruit is going to be your entire garden the next year, really.
Oh, so. For sure. Like a tomato.
It doesn't take much.
Yeah, there's at least 100 seeds in a tomato.
Exactly.
Watermelon, they make lots. Exactly. All of them really make a lot of seeds.
They all make a lot of seeds. And if you let your carrot and your, you know, onion and things like that go to seed, you know, because it doesn't make the seed in the actual produce. It blooms the seeds out on flowers. So you let that go to seed and you're getting thousands of seeds.
Mm-hmm.
Just crazy amounts. So you really don't have to plant much to get a bunch of seeds back.
Right.
It's kind of interesting.
But it just goes all the way back to the same thing we're always talking about. You know, with freedom is the responsibility. You know, you've got to act. You've got to act in your own benefit so that you can be free.
Yeah, freedom is responsibility, because basically we're in a system where we just keep passing the buck.
Mm-hmm.
We give in our freedom away, even though, you know, counterintuitively we say, oh, we're free, we're American. Well, go back to, you know, Unmasking the State episode and you'll start questioning that.
Right.
So, you know, you give your freedom away, you pass the buck on to someone else, you take your freedom back, and you're now making yourself responsible. Which is very empowering, but it's work.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I like it. I like work.
Yeah, I think.
Some people don't. Some people rather just go to the grocery store and buy GMO food and not think twice about where it's coming from and where it's heading, which is, you know, not good.
Yeah, and there's tons of satisfaction in it, too. I mean, when you grow your own tomato plant and then you get to eat some of those tomatoes, it's just weird in how it just feels good.
Yeah.
Well,
you're making something without the dirtiness of the industry and the greed. It's almost like you can feel it or sense it or taste it in some way.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if it's a collective consciousness type thing, but when you start opting out of the system, it just, the feeling you get is very, there's a word I'm looking for and I can't find it.
It's almost kind of like you begin to find yourself in a way.
It gives you a purpose because you can go so far as to grow food for others. And now you've made maybe a small side business where you're not only feeding others, but you are charging a fair price for your bounty.
Right.
Or you're bartering, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a very, you almost connect to your real self when you start choosing real freedom, not this facade of freedom that they've given us, that they've force-fed to us all our years.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, because it is like humans, I just really feel that humans are not supposed to live like we live, being controlled and being told what we can and cannot do. And when you start doing things to step outside of that control, it just feels really good. It feels natural.
Yeah. Yeah, innate is the word I was thinking of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you have this innate sense of feeling that you're doing what you're meant to do as a human being.
Right.
And these new systems of control are very anti-human.
For sure.
This food system is anti-human. Money system is anti-human. Our school systems are anti-human. anti-human, pro-state, mm-hmm. pro-government.
Mm-hmm.
It's very bizarre and inverted and creepy, and it feels almost evil in a way. Like, this shit right here with the GMO, I'm sorry, but that's freaking evil.
Yeah.
Like, that to me feels like pure anti-humanist, pro Illuminati, elitist, New World Order, evil, creepy.
At the very least, it is creepy, and I think it's worse
than that.
It's
creepy as all get out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you make a plant that you've spliced with a fish. I mean, that's just not right. Yeah. Mother Nature's saying, okay, people.
Right.
And she's saying it by the effects of it. So now, because of Monsanto and GMO and Roundup, there are now super weeds. So now GMO, like, now Roundup's going to have to get stronger, or they're going to have to come out with something stronger, because just like how antibiotics work and now there's like super bacteria, it's the same with this system. They're super weeds. They're super insects. Mother Nature is saying, hey, guys, like, you can't cheat the system of nature here. You may for a short term, but long term, you are effing yourself.
Mm-hmm. Because these weeds and these pests are just building up immunities, just like we build up immunities over time to whatever.
Yeah, the answer to this corporate food takeover is to plant your own food, because it's like, well, you know, a lot of people say, well, how do we feed the masses if we don't have these massive industrial agribusiness? You just grow your own dang food. You grow it for your community. You got a bunch of community producers. You take the power back. You put it in a grassroots community type system. You've now created a cell, like a sovereign cell of people that are resilient to these systems. That's how you do it.
Right. It's exactly how you do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which reminds me, I would like to give a plug to that, the Freedom Cell Network.
Oh, yeah.
Freedom Cell Network. Yeah, which is really cool. I just signed up for it. You can go to freedomcell.org, actually. But it's just a place where free-thinking people go to gather, so you can find other people who are free thinkers. And you can organize in whatever way you want. Like, it's kind of a social site, but there's no... Mm-hmm. Like, it's not regulated in such a way. You can just do whatever you want. You can create whatever types of groups you want. There's no censorship of any kind. So, I mean, it's really cool.
Yeah, it's
you should just go. Yeah. I really encourage people just to go check it out. And we don't have any kind of affiliation with that site. I think it's just a great place for free thinkers to gather.
Well, and it's all like peaceful, right?
I think
that's the one thing. It's non-aggression, peaceful gatherings, not like resistance,
rioty
kind of gathering. I just want to make that like really clear.
Yeah, I've been on the site now for about a week, and it's very clear that the people that are on that site have a very good understanding that people are allowed to have their own beliefs. You know, there's not a lot of bickering and arguing about people's beliefs, because you can have whatever beliefs you want there, you know, and people are very tolerant as long as you're kind of following the non-aggression principle. And, you know, if you're just a hateful person, just nobody's going to talk to you. Like, you're not going to find anybody to argue with. You're not, you know what I mean?
Well, I think that's like a huge misconception of decentralization, is that if we decentralize it and we remove government and ruling, that all hell's going to break loose and chaos and murder and horribleness. And it's like so opposite. It actually takes care of itself.
Yeah.
It resolves itself faster. So I'm a part of like Hive, which is a decentralized social media platform. And it's so peaceful there, you know, and people just voice their free thoughts and their free opinions, because, you know, there's no regulation. And it's like very well set up. People completely like just naturally regulate things, because you can upvote or downvote. So if somebody posts something horrible and nasty, like, no admin steps in. It just gets downvoted out, you know?
Yeah, by the community itself.
Of sight. Yeah, the community does all the regulation, you know? It's decentralized.
Right.
So this Freedom Cell Network is a decentralized place where you can gather. And aren't there like people trying to start local cells where you can kind of like barter and buy and sell things like that. So that's like what is cool to me.
You know? The whole concept of it is to help you find people locally that are near you that you can gather with and trade with and support each other. And it's really interesting. You just got to go check it out. They've got a nice little homepage and some stuff that just kind of helps you to understand what it's about. And it's really simple to understand. So I don't think we got to go into a lot of what exactly it is, because it's just...
Just check it out. Something fun to do today.
Yeah. And same with Hive. You know, although I will say that Hive is kind of, it's not terribly user friendly, but you know,
it's actually, if you use a peaked.com, peakd.com, that's the most user friendly version of Hive. And it's basically a cryptocurrency driven social media website where you can actually earn a little bit of cryptocurrency, which can be traded for dollars on content you create, whether it's a video or a post or photos. And you don't make much. You might make a few bucks a post. You might make a few cents a post. But it's kind of cool because it's all done through upvoting. So someone upvotes your post and you get a little bit of Hive coin, you know?
Yeah.
And but it's just a cool decentralized community. And I don't know.
It's free market driven. So if you...
Yeah.
Especially if you're a content creator, like if you write articles and produce videos and things like that, if the community as a whole finds it useful or of good quality, they're going to pay you for it, basically.
Basically.
And if you're just putting out crap, they're just not going to pay you for it.
Yep. Exactly. And if you're very...
It's kind of an oversimplified...
That's right. And then if you're very abusive on there, you're going to get downvoted and then your posts will be hidden and you'll lose reputation and you're going to be done. So so you don't find really anything. You find a lot of positivity on there instead of negativity, which is nice in our crazy world. Like, I know I go onto Facebook and it's so nasty right now. I can't even do it. I go onto Hive and I scroll through Hive and it's like all positive and happy. And I'm like, oh. I'd much rather be like in the positive zone than the negative zone.
Yeah. There's not a place called Hive where they will ban you or censor you, or it's all done through the community. It's all free market.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is awesome.
Exactly. So I just want to quickly rattle off, and I think we've driven the point home. I just have a few more quick points to make of the dangers of corporate control on our seed supply.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll go back into like what you can do about it, which I think we've also driven home. So we're in recap mode. That's what we'll call it.
Okay. Yeah, recap.
So basically, if you have a corporation controlling all the seeds, your smaller farmers are getting edged out, which creates massive price increases in seeds. So now farmers are having to pay more for seeds, yet they can only sell their produce for so much. And then they're contracted to keep repurchasing seeds. So they cannot ever like get out of these contracts, basically, of buying seed for whatever price they choose, whatever strains they choose. So in turn, we have less diversity, less plant species, because let's say the big four only decide to develop 30 plant species from here on out. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's taking away from our food system. We have less variety in turn. And then we have the bottom line is endangered food security, because now we have less diversity. We have less variety. These plants are more vulnerable as we get super weeds and super bugs from all these crazy, you know, toxins. And now our food security is in danger of being annihilated because we put the control into the hands of few.
Mm-hmm.
Turning back over to heirloom seeds, why we want to do heirloom seeds. Heirloom seeds have been tested over the sands of time, basically, mm-hmm. that they are stable. They are resilient to bugs and weeds, although you will lose some, like you said. You're going to lose a little bit, but that's expected. They're not going to produce as big as the hybrid GMO stuff, but that's expected. There's going to be genetic variation. So the other day I pulled a white carrot out of the ground. Out of my orange carrots, right. I got a white carrot out of the ground. It tasted great. It was like an albino carrot. I'm like, oh, yeah. There's some genetic variation.
Right.
But, you know, when you're seed saving, you're collecting seeds from multiple plants. So you're getting this really lovely genetic variation. Genetic variation is resilient to disease and resilient to pests and toxic weeds. So we want variation. We want to see those bizarre shapes and different flavors and things.
Uh-huh.
But we get a generally consistent heirloom seed, right?
Right.
So, or heirloom fruit, you also get the consistent heirloom seed. You seed save. You are now continuing the genetic diversity and variation of multiple types of seeds that are not even available in grocery stores. You are propelling our future food supply.
Yeah.
The end.
The end. And that is a form of counter economics. That is a form of agorism. The idea of creating your own systems of within the food supply to make government and corporate controlled systems irrelevant.
Exactly. Let's make them irrelevant by taking action. We don't need to picket. We don't need to resist. We don't need to protest. We don't need to riot. We just need to become independent. That's the real danger to them.
That's exactly right.
Is taking the real action, not screaming and yelling about it, but putting that heirloom seed in the ground, planting your own plant, making your own food, saving your own seed. That's the real threat to them. That's where they get scared.
And really, they want you to picket, and they want you to protest, and they want you to do all those things, because what that means is you're begging their permission to be treated better, which means that they still get to control the outcome.
Interesting.
You know, they may compromise and give you something that you're asking for, but in the end, they're still in control. So.
You're right. Yeah, that's a really good point. So what you do is you just opt out of their systems.
Yes. You just ignore them.
Don't even try and resist their systems. Just opt out.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to participate in your shitty agribusiness practices. I'm just going to plant my own stuff, even if it is a single tomato plant.
Yeah.
That's one plant closer to seed sovereignty.
Mm-hmm. And that is agorism.
Yeah. Super exciting. I love it. Yeah. So you can get your heirloom seeds from my Etsy store, Maximum Off Grid. I believe you will really be happy with the products I have going. And I also have an heirloom seed growing guide on MaximumOffGrid.com. I go over almost every variety of produce and how to grow it and where to grow it and tips on growing. It's a huge document organized with a table of contents so you can go exactly to what you're looking for. I also have tons of growing guides, really. Like, not tons and tons, but a good selection.
Yeah, and your prices on those seeds are just phenomenal. That's what I want to, that's the point I want to make to people, because if you're not used to buying heirloom seeds, they're not cheap, you know? So
there's no reason for them not to be cheap other than people selling the name heirloom.
Yeah.
That's what I've discovered.
Yeah.
Because an heirloom is just a strain of a vegetable. There's really nothing like more to it than that. It's just a strain of a vegetable. So it's going to make the same amount of seeds. It's not like there's, you know, there's really like, I don't know.
It's not like they're harder to produce.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. Why inflate it so hard? I just, you know, we see this with, you know, the term organic. I mean, yeah, it's probably harder to produce organic stuff, but does it warrant a triple in price?
Right.
Probably not. So I'm kind of taking that stance, which I'm sure my competition doesn't like.
No.
But I'm like, you know what? I want these seeds to live for generations, and I urge all of my buyers, like, please save your seeds and don't ever buy from me again. Please don't. Make it a one-time purchase.
Right. Save your own seeds. Give them to your family.
Exactly. Well, if you have any questions or comments about this episode, there is a link in the show notes that you can leave us a voice message. You can also email us at theoffgridoutpost@gmail.com. Check out our website, theoffgridoutpost.com. We have a lot of great content on there. We have a great PDF giveaway going on. Super cool.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk a little bit about the PDF?
Yeah, we've been working on that for a while. And, you know, if you've listened to some of our previous episodes, we've talked a lot about agorism and counter economics. So we created this PDF about how you can earn money as an agorist, doing it counter economically, keep more of your own money.
Yeah.
Don't give it to the government.
Yeah.
And there's, what is it, 131 ideas right now? And I suspect that'll just grow over time. We'll just probably just update it every now and then with more ideas from you guys. And, you know, even if you've got a regular job now and you're a W-2 employee and the government takes their cut right off the bat, you can start a side hustle that can grow into something that can replace that income, and you can quit that crappy job and live more free. And this is just a PDF designed to give you a bunch of ideas and get your mind turning on what you could do to become more free. And the PDF is free. So
yeah,
you just sign up, you give us your email address. We don't give your email address to anybody else. And we'll just send you some stuff every now and then about new episodes and things like that, just kind of keeping you informed of what we're doing. But yeah, it turned out really good. We worked really hard on it, and we're giving it to you for nothing.
For nothing. Tons of valuable information. It's really cool. I mean, you go through all these different ideas of ways to make money without the government sticking their hand in your pocket, and your gears start turning in your head, and you're like, oh, wow, there's a lot of things I can do as a side hustle and make money. And you can keep your regular job, and it may grow to where you can even quit your job.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's basically what I did 15 years ago. I started doing side jobs on the side. I had a full-time job, and it became that side hustle, which, as you know, I'm a handyman remodeler by trade, and it just became my full-time gig, and I've worked for myself most of my life.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But I started out as a full-time employee working like 60 hours a week for another person. And that's how I whatever free time I had, I worked on my side hustle.
Yeah. So you it's called a hustle for a reason, because yeah, for a minute, like you're working a full-time job and you're working after work, you put the effort in and the commitment, but you do that. And then a year, 6 months, even 3 months, you may be fully independent and can quit that job. So it's like, you got to put a little front work into it, you know?
Yeah.
As opposed to like hating your life at some crap job where you get 50% of your money taken by the government.
Exactly.
But it's just easy to just show up. It's comfortable. It's easy. Whatever like thing you're telling yourself, but we're telling you, like, put a little upfront effort in and get away from that. It's totally doable. And people kind of are scared to, but just download the PDF. It at least gets your like gears going, you know?
Absolutely.
And you just go straight to our website, theoffgridoutpost.com. There's a link right on the main page for the free download. Click on it, enter in your email, send away. But it tends to go to like the promotions tab in Gmail.
Mm-hmm.
So check your promotions tab, check possibly spam if you don't get it straight to your inbox, but it'll be there somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if it doesn't, just email me and I'll send it to you directly.
Yeah, for sure. And then try something on it or come up with your own idea and share it with us.
Yeah, we want to know. Like, we want to grow this list to just be some outrageous, like, huge list of crazy awesome ideas. So you can be a part of that.
Yeah, that's awesome. I guess we've covered everything, huh?
Yep. The only other thing I can think of is if you can, leave us a review on whatever platform you're listening on. It helps us get found. It helps us more relevant in the searches, and it helps inform more people about, you know, becoming independent. So cool. We'll go out there and start planting some heirloom seeds today. No time like the present.
Absolutely.
Signing out.
Talk to you guys later.
Bye.
Here's a little teaser for what's coming next week. In this whole process, the recipe is the most important part if you're making whiskey, because the recipe is what will determine your final product, the flavor, the smoothness. Thanks for listening to the Off-Grid Outpost podcast. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to subscribe so you can get all the new episodes.